Chapter 22. Small Sacrifices. Squinting up at the sign above the inn's arched door, a crudely drawn woman with a walking staff peering hopefully into the distance, Elaine wished she were back in her bed instead of up with the sun. Not that she could have slept. Mulhara Square stood empty behind her except for a few creaking ox and donkey carts on their way to the markets, a scattering of women balancing huge baskets on their heads. A one-legged beggar sat with his bowl at a corner of the inn, the first of many who would dot the square later. She had already given him a silver mark, enough to feed him for a week even now, but he tucked it under his ragged coat with a toothless grin and waited on. The sky was still grey, yet the day already promised to scorch. Keeping concentration well enough to ignore the heat was a problem this morning. The last remnants of Birgitta's morning after head remained in the back of her own, dwindling but not yet gone. If only her small ability with healing had not proved too small. She hoped Avienda and Birgitta would manage to learn something useful about Caradin this morning, in their illusion disguises. Not that Caradin would know any of them from a shoemaker, of course, but it was best to be careful. She felt pride that Avienda had not asked to come along here, had in fact been surprised at the suggestion. Avienda did not believe she needed anyone to watch her, to make sure she did what was needful. With a sigh, she straightened her dress, though there was no need. Blue and cream with a bit of cream-colored Vandalra lace, the garment did make her feel just a touch exposed. The only time she had balked at donning a local fashion was while she and Nynaeve traveled to Tanchica with the sea folk. But in its own way, Ebudari fashion was almost... She sighed again. She was just trying to delay. Avienda should have to come to lead her by the hand. "I will not apologize," Nynaeve said suddenly at her shoulder. She clutched her own grey skirts with both hands, staring at the wandering woman as though Mogedion herself waited inside. "I won't!"
"You should have worn white, after all," Elaine murmured, earning a suspicious sideways glance.
After a moment she added, "You did say it was the color for funerals," which produced a satisfied nod, though it was not what she had meant at all. This would be a disaster if they could not keep peace among themselves. Birgitta had had to settle for an infusion of herbs this morning, and a particularly bitter mix at that, because Nynaeve claimed she was not angry enough to channel. She had gone on in the most dramatic manner about funeral white being the only suitable color, insisted she was not coming, until Elaine dragged her out of their apartments and announced at least 20 times since that she would not apologize. Peace had to be kept, but... "You agreed to this, Nynaeve." "No, I don't want to hear any more about the rest of us bullying you. You agreed, so stop sulking." Nynaeve spluttered, eyes going wide with outrage. She was not to be diverted, though, despite one fiercely incredulous "sulking" under her breath. "We need to discuss this further, Elaine. There is no need to be so hasty. There must be a thousand reasons why this won't work, Taviran or no Taviran, and Matt Cawthon is 900 of them." Elaine gave her a level look. "Did you deliberately choose the bitterest herbs that would work this morning?" Wide-eyed outrage turned to wide-eyed innocence, but red stained Nynaeve's cheeks. Elaine pushed open the door. Nynaeve followed, muttering. Elaine would not have been surprised if she stuck out a tongue, too. Sulky was not even in it this morning. The smell of breads baking wafted from the kitchens, and all the shutters were open to air out the common room. A plump-cheeked serving woman standing atop a tall stool stretched on tiptoes to take down bedraggled evergreen branches from above the windows, while others replaced tables and benches and chairs that must have been taken away for the dancing. This early no one else was about, except for a skinny girl in a white apron, sweeping half-heartedly with a brush-broom. She might have been pretty if her mouth had not seemed set in a constant pout. There was surprisingly little mess, considering that inns were supposed to be riotous, even licentious, during festivals. A part of her wished she could have seen it, though.
"Could you direct me to Master Cawthon's rooms?" she asked the skinny girl with a smile, proffering 2 silver pennies. Nynaeve sniffed. She was tight as the skin on a fresh apple. She had given the beggar 1 copper. The girl eyed them sullenly, and surprisingly the coins as well, and mumbled something sour that sounded like, "A gilded woman last night and ladies this morning." She gave directions grudgingly. For a moment Elaine thought she intended to scorn the pennies, but on the point of turning away the girl snatched the silver from her hand without so much as a word of thanks, pausing only to tuck them into the neck of her dress, of all places, before she set to swinging her broom, as if to beat the floor to death. Perhaps she had a pocket sewn in there. "You see," Nynaeve grumbled under her breath. "You mark me. He tried to push his attentions on that young woman. That's the sort of man you want me to apologize to." Elaine said nothing, only led the way up the railless steps at the back of the room. If Nynaeve did not stop complaining. The first hallway on the right, the girl had said, and the last door on the left, but in front of it she hesitated, biting her lower lip. Nynaeve brightened. "You see it's a bad idea now, don't you? We aren't Aiel, Elaine. I like the girl well enough for all she's forever fondling that knife of hers, but just think of the absolute drivel she talked. It's impossible. You must know it is." "We did not agree to anything impossible, Nynaeve." Keeping her voice firm took an effort. Some of what Avienda had suggested, apparently in all seriousness, she actually had suggested letting the man switch them. "What we did agree to is quite possible." "Barely." She rapped loudly on the paneled door with her knuckles. There was a fish carved on the door, a round thing with stripes and a snout. All of the doors had different carvings, most of fish. There was no answer. Nynaeve puffed out a breath she must have been holding. "Perhaps he has gone out. We'll just have to come back another time." "At this hour?" she rapped once more. "You say he always lies abed when he can." Still no sound from inside. "Elaine, if Birgitta is any indication, Matt got himself juicy as a fiddler last night. He won't thank us for waking him. Why don't we just go away and—" Elaine lifted the latch and went in. Nynaeve followed with a sigh that could have been heard back in the palace. Matt Cawthon was sprawled on his bed atop the knitted red coverlet, a folded cloth lying over his eyes and dripping onto the pillow. The room was not very tidy, despite the absence of dust. A boot stood on the washstand. The washstand, next to a white basin full of unused water. The stand mirror sat askew, as if he had stumbled into it and simply left it tilted back sharply, and his wrinkled coat lay tossed across a ladder-backed chair. He wore everything else, including that black scarf he seemed never to take off, and the other boot. The silver fox head dangled from his unlaced shirt. The medallion made her fingers itch. If he really was lying there sodden with drink, she might be able to remove it unfelt. One way or another, she intended to find out how the thing absorbed the power. Finding out how almost anything worked was a fascination to her, but that fox head was all the puzzles in the world rolled into one. Nynaeve caught her sleeve and jerked her head toward the door, silently mouthing, "Asleep," and something else she could not make out. Probably another plea to go. "Leave me alone, Nerim," he mumbled suddenly. "I told you before, I don't want anything but a new skull. And close the door softly or I'll pin your ears to it." Nynaeve jumped and tried to pull her toward the door, but she stood her ground. "It is not Nerim, Master Cawthon." Raising his head from the pillow, he used both hands to lift the cloth a trifle and squint at them with reddened eyes. Grinning, Nynaeve made no effort at all to hide her pleasure at his wretched state. What Elaine could not understand at first was why she wanted to grin, too. Her one experience with drinking too much had left her with nothing but pity and sympathy for anyone so snared. In the back of her mind, she felt Birgitta's head throbbing still, and it came to her. Certainly she could not like Birgitta drowning herself in drink, whatever the reason, but neither could she like the thought that anyone could do anything at all better than her first warder. A ridiculous thought. Embarrassing. but satisfying, too.
"What are you doing here?"
he demanded hoarsely, then winced and lowered his voice.
"It's the middle of the night."
"It's morning," Nynaeve said sharply. "Don't you remember talking with Birgitta?"
"Could you not be so loud?"
he whispered, closing his eyes. The next instant they popped open again.
"Birgitta?"
Sitting up abruptly, he swung his legs over the side of the bed. For a time he just sat there, peering at the floorboards, elbows on his knees and the medallion swinging from its thong around his neck. At last he turned his head to look at them balefully, or perhaps his eyes just made it seem so.
"What did she tell you?"
"She informed us of your demands, Master Cawthon," Elaine said formally. "This must be how it felt to stand before the headsman's block. There was nothing for it but to keep her head high and face whatever came proudly. I wish to thank you from my heart for rescuing me from the Stone of Tyr." "There," she had begun. And it had not hurt. Not very much. Nynaeve stood there glowering, her lips growing tighter and tighter. The woman was not going to leave her to do this alone. Elaine embraced the source almost before she thought, and channeled a thin flow of air that flicked Nynaeve's earlobe like a snapping finger. The woman clapped a hand to her ear and glowered, but Elaine simply turned coolly back to Master Cawthon and waited. "I thank you, too," Nynaeve mumbled sullenly at last. "From the heart." Elaine rolled her eyes in spite of herself. He had asked them to speak more softly, and he did seem to hear. Strangely, he shrugged with embarrassment.
"Oh, that. It was nothing. Likely thing you'd have gotten yourself free in another tick without me."
His head sank to his hands, and he pressed the damp cloth to his eyes once more.
"On your way out, would you ask Kyra to bring me some wine punch? A slender girl, pretty, with a warm eye?"
Elaine quivered. Nothing? The man demanded an apology. She humbled herself to give it, and now it was nothing? He was not deserving of sympathy or pity. She still held Sidar, and she considered thumping him with a much thicker flow than she had used on Nynaeve. Not that that would do any good so long as he wore the fox head. Then again it hung loose, not touching him. Did it offer the same protection when it was not... Nynaeve ended her speculation by lunging for him, fingers clawed. Elaine managed to put herself between them and seize the other woman by the shoulders. For a stretched moment they stood nose to nose, except for the difference in their heights. With a grimace, Nynaeve finally relaxed, and Elaine felt it was safe to release her. The man still had his head bowed, all unaware. Whether the medallion protected him or not, she could snatch his bow stave from the corner and beat him till he howled. She felt heat rise in her face. She had stopped Nynaeve from ruining everything only to think of ruining it herself. Worse, by the smirky, self-satisfied little smile the other woman gave her, she knew very well what had been in her head. "There is more, Master Cawthon," she announced, squaring her shoulders. The smile vanished from Nynaeve's face. "We also wish to apologize for delaying so long in giving you your much-deserved thanks. And we apologize, humbly," she stumbled a little on that, "for the way we have treated you since." Nynaeve stretched out a beseeching hand that she ignored. "To show the depth of our regret, we undertake the following promises." Avienda had said an apology was only a beginning. "We will not belittle or demean you in any way, nor shout at you for any reason, nor attempt to give you orders." Nynaeve winced. Elaine's mouth tightened too, but she did not stop. "Recognizing your due concern for our safety, we will not leave the palace without telling you where we are going, and we will listen to your advice." Light! She had no wish to be Aiel, no wish to do any of this, but she wanted Avienda's respect. If you decide that we are..." Not that she had any intention of becoming a sister wife. The very idea was indecent, but she did like her.
are putting ourselves in needless danger."
It was not Avienda's fault that Rand had caught both their hearts, and Min's as well.
"We will accept bodyguards of your choosing.
Fate or Taviran or whatever, what was, was. She loved both women like sisters.
And keep them with us as long as possible.
Burn the man for doing this to her." It was not Matt Cawthon she meant.
"This I swear by the Lion Throne of Andor."
She breathed in as if she had run a mile. Nynaeve wore a face like a cornered badger. His head swiveled toward them ever so slowly, and he lowered the cloth just enough to expose one red-streaked eye.
"You sound like you have an iron rod down your throat, my lady," he said mockingly. "You have my permission to call me Matt."
Odious man! He would not know civility if it bit him on the nose. That sanguine eye slanted toward her.
"What about you, Nynaeve? I heard a lot of we from her, but not a word from you."
"I won't shout at you," Nynaeve shouted. "And all the rest, too. I promise you, you..."
She gobbled on the edge of swallowing her tongue as she realized she could not call him one of the names he warranted without breaking the promise already. And yet the effect of her shout was most gratifying. With a cry, he shuddered and dropped the cloth, clutched his head with both hands. His eyes bulged.
"Flaming dice," he whimpered, or something very like.
It suddenly struck Elaine that he would be a very good source of pithy language. Stablemen and the like always seemed to scrape their tongues clean the moment they saw her. Of course she had promised herself to civilize him, to make him useful to Rand, but that need not interfere too much with his language. In fact, she realized there was a good deal she had not promised not to do. Pointing that out should settle Nynaeve considerably. After a long moment, he spoke in a hollow voice.
"Thank you, Nynaeve."
He paused to swallow hard.
"I thought you two must be somebody else in disguise there for a bit. Since I still seem to be alive, we might as well take care of the rest of it. I seem to recall that Birgitta said you wanted me to find something for you."
"What?"
"You won't find it," Nynaeve told him in a firm voice.
Well, perhaps more hard than firm, but Elaine did not think of calling her down. He merited every wince.
"You will accompany us, and we will find it."
"Backtracking already, Nynaeve?" Somehow he managed a derisive sneer, especially hideous with his eyes.
"You just finished promising to do as I say. If you want to tame Taviran on a leash, go ask Rand or Perrin and see what answer you get."
"We promised no such thing, Matrim Cawthon," Nynaeve snapped, going up on her toes. "I promised no such thing."
She looked about to fling herself at him again. Even her braid seemed to bristle. Elaine kept a better rein on her temper. They would get nowhere bludgeoning him.
"We will listen to your advice and accept it, if it is reasonable, Master
Matt," she chided gently. Surely he could not really believe they had promised to. Looking at him, though, she saw that he did.
Oh, light! Nynaeve was right. He was going to be trouble.
She held that rein firmly. Channeling again, she lifted his coat from the chair to a proper place on one of the pegs on the wall so she could sit, back straight, arranging her skirts carefully. Keeping her promises to Master Cawthon, Matt, and to herself were going to be difficult, but nothing he said or did could touch her. Nynaeve eyed the only other place to sit, a low carved wooden footstool, and remained standing. One hand moved toward her braid before she folded her arms. Her foot tapped ominously.
"The Atha An Mier call it the Bowl of the Winds, Master
Matt.
It is a Turangrial."
By the end, a light of excitement shone through his sickliness.
"Now that would be a thing to find," he murmured.
"In the Rahad." He shook his head and flinched.
"I'll tell you this now. Neither of you is setting foot on the other side of the river without four or five of my red arms each. Not outside the palace, for that matter. Did Birgitta tell you about the note that was stuffed in my coat? I'm sure I told her. And there's Cardin and his dark friends. You can't tell me he isn't up to something."
"Any sister who supports Egwene as Amarlin is in danger from the tower," bodyguards everywhere. Light. A dangerous light shone in Nynaeve's eyes, and her foot tapped faster.
We cannot hide, Matt, and we will not. Jaikim Carradine will be taken care of in due course.
They had not promised to tell him everything, and they could not let him be diverted. There are more important matters afoot.
Due course? He began, voice rising in disbelief, but Nynaeve cut him short.
4 or 5 each? She said sourly. That's ridic-.
Her eyes shut for a moment, and her tone became milder. Slightly milder.
I mean to say it isn't sensible. Elaine and me, Brigitta and Avienda, you don't have that many soldiers.
Anyway, all we really need is you.
That last came out as though dragged. It was too much an admission.
Brigitta and Avienda don't need minders, he said absently. I suppose this Bowl of the Winds is more important than Carradine, but it doesn't seem right, letting dark friends walk loose.
Slowly Nynaeve's face turned purple. Elaine checked her own in the stand mirror, relieved to see she was maintaining her composure. On the outside, anyway. The man was reprehensible.
Minders? She was not sure which would be worse, that he had flung that offhand insult on purpose, or that he had done so without realizing.
She eyed herself in the mirror again and lowered her chin a trifle.
Minders? She was poise itself.
He studied them with those bloodshot eyes, but saw nothing, apparently.
"Was that all Brigitta told you?" he asked. And Nynaeve snapped back, "That was quite enough, I think, even for you."
Inexplicably, he looked surprised and quite pleased.
Nynaeve gave a start, then folded her arms around herself tighter. "Since you're in no condition to go anywhere with us now, don't scowl at me, Matt Cawthon. That isn't demeaning, it's simple truth. You can spend the morning moving yourself into the palace. And you needn't think we'll help carry your things. I didn't promise to be a packhorse." "The wandering woman is plenty good enough," he began angrily, then stopped, a wondering expression spreading over his face. A horrified expression, Elaine would have said. That should teach him to growl when he had a head like a melon. At least that was what hers had felt like the time she drank too much. Of course he would not learn from it. Men kept sticking their hands in the fire, thinking this time it would not burn, so Leany always said. "You can hardly expect we'll find the bowl the first time we try," Nynaeve went on, "Taviran or no. Going out each day will be much simpler if you don't have to come across the square." If they did not have to wait for him every morning, was what she meant. According to her, drunkenness was not the only excuse he could find for lying in bed till all hours, far from it. "Besides," Elaine added, "that way you can keep an eye on us." Nynaeve made a sound in her throat, very close to a groan. Did she not see that he must be enticed? It was not as if she had promised to actually allow him to keep an eye on them. He seemed not to have heard her or Nynaeve. Haggard eyes stared right through her.
"Why did they bloody well have to stop now?" he moaned, so softly she barely heard.
What under the light did he mean by that?
"The rooms are fit for a king, Master Matt. Tylin herself chose them, just down from her own. She has taken a very personal interest. Matt, you wouldn't have us offend the queen, would you?"
One look at his face, and Elaine hurriedly channeled to push open the window and empty the washbasin through it. If she had ever seen a man about to lose the contents of his stomach, he was staring red-eyed at her right that minute.
"I don't see why you're making such a fuss," she said. Actually, she supposed she did. Some of the serving women here probably let him paw them, but she doubted many in the palace would, if any. He would not be able to drink and gamble his nights away, either. Tylin surely would not allow a bad example for Beslan.
"We all must make sacrifices." With an effort, she stopped there, not telling him that his was small and only right, theirs monstrous and unjust, no matter what Avienda said. Nynaeve had certainly railed against any sacrifice. He put his head in his hands again, making strangled noises while his shoulders shook. He was laughing. She hefted the basin on a flow of air, considering hitting him with it. When he raised his eyes again, though, he looked outraged for some reason.
"Sacrifices," he snarled. "If I asked you to make the same, you'd box every ear in sight and pull the roof down on my head."
Could he still be drunk? She decided to ignore his frightful glare. "Speaking of your head, if you would like healing, I'm sure Nynaeve would oblige."
If she had ever been angry enough to channel, she was now.
Nynaeve gave a small jerk and glanced at her from the corner of one eye.
"Of course," she said hurriedly. "If you want."
The color in her cheeks confirmed all of Elaine's suspicions about that morning. Gracious as ever, he sneered.
"You just forget my head. I do very well without eyes, Sedai."
And then, just to confuse matters, she was sure, he added in a hesitant voice, "I thank you for asking, though."
Almost as if he meant it.
Elaine managed not to gape. Her knowledge of men was limited to Rand and what Linny and her mother had told her. Was Rand going to be as confusing as Matt Cawthon? Last thing before going, she remembered to secure a promise that he would start moving to the palace immediately. He kept his word once given, so Nynaeve had made clear, however reluctantly, but leave one crack, and he could find 100 ways to slip through. That she'd been all too eager to emphasize. He gave his promise with a bleak, resentful grimace, or maybe that was just his eyes again. When she set the basin down at his feet, he actually looked grateful. She would not feel sympathy. She would not. Once back in the corridor with the door to Matt's room closed, Nynaeve shook her fist at the ceiling.
"That man could try the patience of a stone. I'm glad he wants to cuddle with his head. Do you hear me? Glad. He will make trouble. He will.
You two will make more trouble for him than he ever could."
The speaker stalked down the hall toward them. A woman with a touch of gray in her hair, a strong face, and a commanding voice. She also wore a frown little short of a scowl. Despite the marriage knife hanging into her cleavage, she was too fair for an Ebu Dari.
"I couldn't believe it when Kyra told me. I doubt I've ever seen so much foolishness poured into just 2 dresses."
Elaine eyed the woman up and down. Not even as a novice had she gotten used to being addressed in that tone.
"And who might you be, my good woman?"
"I might be and am Satala Anan, the owner of this inn, child," was the dry reply. And with that, the woman flung open a door across the hallway, seized them each by an arm, and hustled them through so fast Elaine thought her slippers had left the floor.
"You seem under some misapprehension, Mistress Anan," she said coolly as the woman released them to shut the door.
Nynaeve was in no mood for niceties. Holding her hand so her great serpent ring was plain, she said heatedly,
"Now you look here!"
"Very pretty," the woman said, and pushed each of them so hard they found themselves sitting side by side on the bed. Elaine's eyes popped in disbelief. This Anan woman confronted them, grim-faced, fists on her hips, for all the world like a mother about to castigate her daughters.
"Flaunting that just shows how silly you are. That young man will dandle you on his knee, one on each, I shouldn't wonder, if you allow. He'll take a few kisses, and as much else as you're willing to give, but he won't harm you. You can harm him, though, if you keep on with this."
Harm him? The woman thought they... She thought he had dandled? She thought... Elaine did not know whether to laugh or cry, but she stood up, straightening her skirts.
"As I said, Mistress Anan, you are under a misapprehension."
Her voice became smoother as she went on, confusion giving way to calm.
"I am Elaine Trakand, daughter heir of Andor and Aes Sedai of the Green Aja. I don't know what you think..."
Her eyes nearly crossed as Mistress Anan pushed a finger to the tip of her nose.
"Elaine, if that is your name, all that keeps me from dragging you down to the kitchen and washing your mouth out, yours and that other foolish girl's there, is the possibility that you actually can channel somewhat. Or are you silly enough to wear that ring when you can't even do that?
I warn you it will make no difference to the sisters over in the Tarasin Palace. Do you even know about them? If you do, frankly, you are not foolish, you're blind stupid.
Elaine's temper grew by the word. Foolish girl? Blind stupid? She would not put up with it, especially not right after being forced to crawl to Matt Cawthon.
Dandel? Matt Cawthon?
She maintained her outward composure, though, but not so Nynaeve. She glared in a fury, and the glow of Sidar enveloped her as she bounded to her feet. Flows of air wrapped Mistress Annan from shoulders to ankles, crushing her skirts and petticoats against her legs, just short of tight enough to topple her.
"I happen to be one of those sisters in the palace, Nynaeve Almira of the Yellow Aja, to be exact. Now would you like me to carry you down to the kitchens? I know something of how to wash out a mouth."
Elaine stepped away from the innkeeper's outstretched arm.
The woman had to feel the pressure of the flows, and even a half-wit would have known what those invisible bonds must be, yet she did not blink. Her green-flecked eyes narrowed no more.
"So one of you can channel, at least," she said calmly. "I should let you drag me downstairs, child. Whatever you do to me, you would be in the hands of real Aes Sedai by noon, I'll wager that."
"Didn't you hear me?" Nynaeve demanded.
The Annan woman did not even pause.
"You'll not only spend the next year blubbering, you will do part of it in front of anyone you told that you were Aes Sedai. Be sure they'll make you tell. They will turn your liver to water. I should let you go blundering on your way, or else run across to the palace as soon as you loose me. The only reason I don't is that they'll make an example of Lord Matt nearly as much as of you, if they even suspect he's helped you, and, as I said, I like the young man."
"I'm telling you," Nynaeve tried again, but still the innkeeper gave her no chance to tell anything. Tied like a bundle, the woman was a boulder rolling downhill. She was the whole hillside falling, flattening whatever lay in its path.
"Trying to keep up the lie does no good, Nynaeve. You look to be, 21, give or take a year, so you might be as much as 10 years older if you've already reached the slowing. You might even have worn the shawl 4 or 5 years, except for one thing."
Her head, the only part of her she could move, swiveled toward Elaine.
"You, child, aren't old enough to have slowed yet, and no woman has ever worn the shawl as young as you, never in the history of the tower. If you ever were in the tower, I'll wager you wore white and squeaked every time the mistress of novices glanced your way. You had some goldsmith make that ring for you. There are some, fool enough, I hear. Or maybe Nynaeve stole it for you if she has any right to hers. Either way, since you can't be a sister, neither can she. No Aes Sedai would travel with a woman who was pretending."
Elaine frowned, not noticing that she was chewing her lower lip. Slowed, slowing. How did an innkeeper in Ebu Dar know those words? Maybe Setala Annan had gone to the tower as a girl, though she would not have remained long, since she clearly could not channel. Elaine would have known, even if her ability had been as small as her own mother's, and Morgay's Trakand had had an ability so small she would have been sent away in a matter of weeks, probably, had she not then been daughter-heir.
"Release her, Nynaeve," she said, smiling. She truly did feel more well-disposed toward the woman now. It must have been terrible to make that journey to Tar Valon, only to be turned away. There was no reason the woman had to believe them. Something tickled at that, but she could not say what. No reason at all. But if she had made the trip to Tar Valon, maybe she would walk across the Mulhara. Marilla or any of the other sisters could set her straight.
"Release her!" Nynaeve yelped.
"Elaine!"
"Release her.
Mistress Annan, I see the only way to convince you is..."
"The Ammerlin's seat and 3 sitters couldn't convince me, child."
Light, did she ever let anyone finish a sentence?
"Now, I don't have time for any more games. I can help the pair of you. I know those who can, anyway, some women who take in strays. You can thank Lord Matt that I'm willing to take you to them, but I must know. Were you ever in the tower, or are you wilders?
If you were there, were you put out or did you run away? The truth. They handle each in a different way.
Elaine shrugged. They had done what they came for. She was more than ready to stop wasting time and get on with what needed doing next.
If you won't be convinced, then that's all there is to it. Nynaeve, it is past time we were on our way.
The flows around the innkeeper vanished, and the glow around Nynaeve, too. But Nynaeve stood there watching the woman warily, hopefully. She wet her lips.
You know a group of women who can help us?
Nynaeve, Elaine said. We don't need any help. We are Aes Sedai, remember?
With a wry glance in her direction, Mistress Annan gave her skirts a shake to straighten them, and bent to smooth her exposed petticoats. Her real attention was on Nynaeve. Elaine had never felt so completely shunted aside in her life.
I know a few women who take in the occasional wilder or runaway, or woman who failed her test for accepted or the shawl. There must be at least 50 of them altogether, though the number changes. They can help you find a life without the risk of a real sister making you wish she'd just skin you and be done. Now don't lie to me. Were you ever in the tower? If you've run away, you might as well decide to go back. The tower managed to find most runaways even during the War of the Hundred Years, so you needn't think this little bother now will stop them. In truth, my suggestion then would be to go across the square and throw yourself on a sister's mercy. It will be a small mercy, I'm afraid, but you can believe me, it's more than you'll find if they have to drag you back. You won't even think of so much as leaving the tower grounds without permission after that.
Nynaeve drew a deep breath. We were told to leave the tower, Mistress Annan. I will swear to that however you ask.
Elaine stared in disbelief.
Nynaeve, what are you saying? Mistress Annan, we are Aes Sedai.
The Annan woman laughed. Child, let me talk with Nynaeve, who at least seems old enough to have sense. You tell the Circle that, and they will not take it kindly. They won't care you can channel. They can, too. And they'll smack your bottom or toss you out in the street on your nose if you play the fool.
Who is this Circle? Elaine demanded. We are Aes Sedai. You come across to the Tarasin Palace, and you will see.
I'll keep her in hand. Nynaeve had the gall to say, all the while frowning and grimacing at Elaine, as if she were the one who had gone mad.
The Annan woman merely nodded.
Good. Now take off those rings and put them away. The Circle doesn't allow that sort of pretending. They'll have them melted down to give you a start. Though by the look of your dresses, you have coin. If you stole it, don't let Rihanna know. One of the first rules you'll have to learn is don't steal, even if you are starving. They don't want to draw attention.
Elaine made a fist and thrust it behind her back, and watched Nynaeve meekly slip her ring off and tuck it into her belt pouch. Nynaeve, who howled every time Marilla or Adelius or any of them forgot she was a full sister.
Trust me, Elaine, Nynaeve said.
Which Elaine would have had an easier time of if she had any notion what the woman was up to. Still, she did trust her, mostly.
A small sacrifice, she muttered.
Aes Sedai did go without their rings when the need arose, and she had too while passing for a sister. But it was hers by right now. Removing that band of gold almost hurt physically.
Talk to your friend, child, the Annan woman told Nynaeve impatiently. Rihanna Corley won't put up with all this sulky pouting, and if you make me waste my morning for nothing. Come along, come along. It's lucky for you I like Lord Matt.
Elaine held on to cool composure by a fingernail. Sulky pouting?
Sulky pouting?
When she had the chance, she was going to kick Nynaeve where it hurt.